Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report, hoping to enter into a big news week. Last week sucked. It really did. But this one's shaping up to be, I mean, horrible, really horrible, but big. Lots of big, horrible things coming at you. That's the Damage Report. But we start off with a fantastic Monday. Once again, back in the day where she belongs. Francesca, how's it going?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I hope you're okay. Should I like check on you or whatever? Do we need to like?
I think I'm okay. How are you doing?
Like, oh, I've got a whole week of news. Rather than bless you, news gods. Thank you for showering me with awfulness.
I am ungrateful when it comes to the awful shower that I get.
I shall betroth this to the algorithm for you. I'm sorry. This is what we do every morning.
This is what we do. And if you think that's the last accent we're getting out of Francesca, then you haven't been looking at the big breaking news of the day. So we got that to look forward to. What else do we have to look forward to? No. Damn, it's a rough news day. Anyway, no, we got a lot of really interesting stuff, just not necessarily a lot of light, happy, go lucky type stuff. But what we do have is you, and what you have is a mission. And that mission, should you choose to accept it, is to hit the like button and share the stream so that algorithm, which is so desperate, as portrayed by Francesca Fiorentini, so desperate for your approval, will give us what we need. And so if you could do that, that would be great. And if you want to send us messages, tweets, super chat, stuff like that, we'll respond as we go. Now that said, Francesca, are you ready to do this? Okay, well, get ready, because there's a lot here and I couldn't cut anything. So
that's okay.
Let's jump into it.
Do it.
We knew that the new IPCC report on the current state of climate change and projections going into the future was going to happen today, and that it was likely to be negative. Well, it's here. No, boy, is it negative. We've apparently entered into unprecedented territory that is being called by the UN Secretary General a code red for humanity. So we are moving into a place with our climate where computer model projections for what is likely to happen in the future are becoming increasingly difficult, because we don't have a lot of past data to inform these models with. In the past, we'd have been able to look back at previous periods of heating and things like that and assume that things might go like that. But we, like, literally they're saying we have to go back to when the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs hit for a period of heating in such a short period of time. Now, let's get into some of the conclusions, and there is a lot. Nations have delayed curbing their fossil fuel emissions for so long that they can no longer stop global warming from intensifying over the next 30 years, though there is still a short window to prevent the most harrowing future. And ooh, are you entering into fun territory when the future can be described as harrowing? And when, if you do everything that you can, there's still an implication that the future is going to be harrowing. It just won't be the most harrowing. But anyway, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has risen to levels not seen in 2 million years, according to the authors. And by the way, this report was put together by 234 authors relying on more than 14,000 studies from around the globe. Or, as I'm sure it'll be greeted on Fox News, a bunch of fake news. Anyway, the oceans are turning acidic, sea levels continue to rise, Arctic ice is disintegrating, weather-related disasters are growing more extreme and affecting every region of the world. And when we start to talk about the conclusions, the level of certainty that the authors can talk about what they think is likely to happen, we are far away from the two decades ago, like scientists coming out in their white coat and saying, well, you know, I think this might be bad times. Maybe you might want to look into doing something. No, they're not there anymore. The report's 42-page summary for policymakers uses the phrase virtually certain nearly a dozen times. The words high confidence come up more than 100 times. And the rate of sea level rise, the retreat of ice sheets and glaciers, and the acidity of the oceans are all described as unprecedented in the past several thousand years. So, Francesca, they're not really playing games anymore. It took them a long time to move past them. Unfortunately, as of right now, we're still playing games. So thoughts?
At least Seattle's gonna have nice summers all year round, all the time. Obviously this is devastating and upsetting. And also we knew it. Like every time the IPCC releases a report every 7 years. And I feel like every time they release a report, we're always like finding out how many years left we have to prevent the ultimate doom and gloom. Like not just like some forests burning and like some people losing their homes, but like everyone running for their bunkers if they have them. So they come out and it's like, you know, they release like the white smoke, you know, like they're announcing a new pope, you know, and they're just like, four years left. And then we're just like, oh God, okay, we got 4 years. What am I gonna do in 4 years? You know, and it's, and then we just sort of like shudder and wait for them to tell us how much we're effing up the planet. And we already knew we were.
Yeah.
But like the real thing is obviously, what are we gonna do about it? But yes, we knew this amount of devastation was happening. We can see it before our very eyes. You talk about 30 years, that's like our, this is our lifetimes, right? It's sort of the rest of our lives. And I think especially for folks, yeah, and especially for folks our age, you know, like 21, it's sort of a, it is a wake up call of what are we doing with this life? You know, what are we doing? How are we ensuring if this is the last generation that can truly stop this, how are we going to work towards that in the next 30 years of our lives or not?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we obviously like, we have to talk about this. I'm hoping it's a big news story. I mean, we'll see. Like, this is like the biggest, most important one of these reports since like 8 years ago. We'll see if people care. But it kind of has the feel of, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Like, you know, I go to the doctor once every 2 years or 4 years for a physical or whatever. And every time,
once every nine. Okay.
Every once in a while, when I remember that, oh yeah, people go to doctors like routinely. Anyway, yeah. I'll go and you know, they'll slap the thing on and then they'll put you on a scale and you'll look at it and then you'll look at the doctor and the doctor will just look at you and you're like, yeah, no, this is proceeding the way you said it would if nothing changed. But I think we'll see what happens in the next 4 years. I'm sure that doing the same thing, consuming the same things will result in wildly different outcomes. Nope, it isn't. But you know what? Whatever. It's just our planet, I guess. So it has that vibe of like, oh, surely this will break through, he said naively. But anyway, why don't we jump into some more of the details? Actually, yes, I think we're gonna reset here. With the IPCC report out now, let's talk about what has happened and what is likely to happen and how things just might get worse if they don't immediately get better. So humans have already heated the planet by roughly 1.1 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the 19th century. And even if nations started sharply cutting emissions today, total global warming is likely to rise around 1.5 degrees Celsius within the next 2 decades, a hotter future that is now essentially locked in. So like all the stuff that we've done that's really bad, you know, we're gonna have more than that much more no matter what we apparently do. So what will that look like? Well, at 1.5 degrees of warming, scientists have found the dangers grow considerably. Nearly 1 billion people worldwide could swelter in more frequent life-threatening heat waves. Hundreds of millions more would struggle for water because of severe droughts. Some animal and plant species alive today will be gone. Coral reefs, which sustain fisheries for large swaths of the globe, will suffer more frequent mass die-offs. So at 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, this is where it's getting fun. Air can hold significantly more moisture than it does now, making droughts more likely and extreme rainfall worse. I don't think that gets talked about enough, that like it literally will hold more moisture in the air. Like that's a thing that happens and that will be everywhere. At 4 degrees Celsius, intense heat waves that used to occur about once every 50 years will become annual events. And what do you mean will become? That's happening right now. Like look at Palm Springs every year. Look at, I understand we're in California, but
Palm Springs,
it's getting bad.
Palm Springs is an abomination and should have never been built in the first place. Number one, it's the middle of a desert. But
yes,
you know, look at Greece, look at towns in Germany being swept away. Yeah, this is not every year. This is every couple months.
Yeah,
there is an unprecedented weather event that is destroying a community somewhere around the world.
Yeah, yeah. And so, look, here I'm trying to focus on, like, so right now we have so many people in power who either don't accept that this is happening or pretend that it's not happening as they like stuff their pockets with cash. If we could get them to accept it, what they might think is, okay, so it's getting a little bit worse. But that's not really how it's working. I mean, that's why we mentioned the thing about the air sucking up the moisture, causing, you know, droughts and causing problems with farming and things like that. But that's not the only example of it. And we return to this every once in a while because not a lot of shows do, but I want to focus on it a little bit more. So, warming beyond 2 degrees Celsius, which is going to happen, also carries increased risk of setting off feedback processes that cause climate change to accelerate. Higher temperatures will thaw Arctic permafrost, potentially unleashing carbon that has been locked in a deep freeze for thousands of years. Methane trapped in the deep sea could make its way into the atmosphere. Wildfires could turn millions more acres of carbon-rich forests into a source of additional greenhouse gases. I often mention that there is a limit to how much heat the ocean can absorb, and that will tail off over time. That is one thing that has been sort of masking how hot the world has been getting. Some of it is going into the ocean, which we don't feel as directly, but that is not going to last forever. These sinks for carbon, the ocean, the Arctic, the Amazon, all of that, they're all being destroyed. And that means that we will not just have a worsening of our situation, we will have an accelerating worsening of our situation. And it leaves us in a place where, to throw out some numbers that will mean little to me or you probably, humans can unleash less than 500 additional gigatons of carbon dioxide, the equivalent of about 10 years of current global emissions, to have an even chance of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And so we will get in a moment into what the US and other countries are trying to do. But Francesca, what do you think?
It's okay, 500 gigatons divided by 8 billion people. How many are we?
So there's something like that. It's getting close, yeah.
Okay. So like how many gigaton? How many point zeros of a gigaton do I get? Let's parse it out, people. How much more can you spend? And what can you not afford to do? And I mean this is real, right? Okay, so the thing about the IPCC is that it is effectively toothless, right? There is no enforcement agency. It is part of the United Nations, already doesn't have an enforcement body. There are not monetary consequences on countries that do not comply with any of these recommendations. They are, in fact, recommendations. And we need to change that, right? We all need to become angry Swedish preteens and you know, demand that our governments actually act on this. It's because it is terrifying. And we know that it is not on each individual person to individually stop doing one individual thing. Yes, it helps. I'm not saying it doesn't help. It definitely fights the sadness. I know my compost in my front yard helps me feel a little bit less terrible, just a little bit. But on a macro scale, it is at the level, and all, you know, climate writers and journalists have said this, including Naomi Klein, right? That it is too big. There is too much money that needs to be invested to switch course on this. That as good as you might feel about, you know, getting a paper straw, which look, I don't even dunk on that. I think that's fine. But we need broad action. We need governmental and corporate. I mean, we need governmental action to clamp down on the corporate action. Because these corporations will make money off of the lifeboats we're using to escape this, you know, the fire. Like this is, they will be selling you their merch on that boat and be like, well, if you pay for a subscription, you'll get a daily, you know, like droplet of water or whatever the hell it is, you know, like, ooh, fresh water from Amazon. And literally like I'm sorry, this is just a rant. Anna and I did a story recently about the fires in the Amazon, the actual Amazon, and I Googled, because this is how I do research, no big deal. I Googled Amazon fire. What is the first thing you get when you Google Amazon fire? Oh, The little tablet stick. Exactly. The tablet, the thing that Jeff Bezos decided to name his effing product after not just a rainforest that the world relies on, that he is effectively helping to destroy because the massive amounts of carbon it takes to send all that BS all over the world, but then the fire stick.
It is
weird. Like, we suck. We suck. Humanity sucks. Capitalism sucks.
Yeah, it'd be like a new spinoff of my product, Coral. You've liked the original Coral. Now we have Coral Bleach. That seems exactly. Weird. Don't do that. Yes. And as you're pointing out, they're making money off this. And there is sort of a fundamental disconnect where the entities, corporations, politicians who are most directly responsible for all of this are making all of the money doing it. They're not just doing it because their kink is destroying the environment. They're making money off of it. We're suffering and not making any money. So you have the two different sides. Mm-hmm. And the one side that's suffering is saying, hey, would you guys like willingly, voluntarily stop making all the ungodly amounts of money that you're getting at no personal cost to you? And expecting, hey, maybe it'll work this time. Except it's not going to. So we need to replace all the politicians. We need to make doing what they're doing either literally illegal or more costly than the solution. And instead, we're wasting time arguing about whether the only politicians actually pushing for a solution here are secretly the worst. So anyway, what were we gonna say?
Are we gonna continue with this topic?
We have a little bit more, but what did you want to say?
No, keep going then.
Okay, so blah 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 blah. He says do something. I don't really believe it. Blah blah blah. He says he has new targets, but then none of the countries are meeting the targets that they've already said they're gonna blah 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 blah. So let me give you the response. So in waiting for this IPCC report to come out, I of course wanted to know what Greta thought about it. She has her expectations going into it, and she responded thusly. The new IPCC report contains no real surprise. Actually, do you want to read this, Francesca? Mm-hmm. Would you prefer to read this?
It confirms what we already know from thousands of previous studies and reports that we are in an emergency. It's a solid but cautious summary of the current best available science. It doesn't tell us what to do. It is up to us to be brave and to take decisions based on scientific evidence provided in these reports. We can still avoid the worst consequences, but not if we continue like today, and not without treating the crisis like a crisis.
Somewhere Greta is watching that thinking, wait, did I record that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, and look, she's right. Again, it doesn't.
I got verklempt just doing my impression of her getting passionate. That's how both amazing she is and amazing I am. And I'm just gonna do my own
work. By the way, someone in the audience was worried because they're like, is Greta going backwards? Francesca just called her a preteen. Anyway,
she's older. She is. She's on the cover of Vogue.
She's 30 now. Anyway, Yes, so she's right. I mean, there are implications for what should be done, but I would say, look, could I give you the best possible top 10 list of things that we should do? Maybe not, but I do think that on the list, I would try to fit doing literally anything. I think that would be a nice change of pace. Here is what I know. We have everything we need to fix this. We have all the knowledge, we have all the technology, we have all the resources. We do not have to, nor can we afford to wait for some sort of massive screen that flies through the air and sucks up carbon and turns it into Tamagotchis. Like, we don't need that. It's probably not gonna come and it'll be too late if it does. We have everything we need now. The only thing we don't have is politicians who will mandate that it be done. That you literally ban the internal combustion engine, that you like force the renovation of buildings, that you change our mass scale industrial agriculture, that you mandate all of this, you start building solar and wind power, and I will tell you when you can stop. Don't ask me, I will call you when you can stop. Just do it. Set up massive battery banks. regional battery banks to store power to get us through the fact that obviously renewable energy is usually best at certain times of day and not at others. We can fix that. If we can fit it in a car, we can do massive factory ones. And if it wins over the libertarians, you can involve Elon Musk. I'd really prefer that you don't, but if you have to, you can. We can do all of this, but instead we'll just spend a few more years saying, I don't really know. Yeah, maybe we need new technology or something. Like, should we do something? I don't know. Do we really want to hurt some coal company in West Virginia that's been living large for decades and decades and decades, killing us, killing its workers? How much murder exactly are we supposed to let them get away with? Anyway, obviously there's a lot that could be said here, but Francesca, what are your thoughts? How's it gonna play out?
I want you in charge, Secretary of Energy, number one. And number two, I think you're absolutely right. Look, we are beyond making the moral, the political, the scientific case on climate change, okay? We cannot get waylaid in arguing with Fox News pundits and right wingers about whether or not we need to do these things. We know we need to do these things. It is an apolitical thing. It is as apolitical as wearing a mask and getting a vaccine to stop the spread of a global pandemic and a virus, right? Which we know has been politicized, but I think we have to stop getting everyone's buy-in and just do it and show the proof in the actual results, right? That, you know, and look, if you are weather fitting, if you're putting solar panels, if you're using alternative energy, when it comes to federal buildings, right? Let's start there at least, right? Like, what can we do now? What can we do today? What can the president do unilaterally, right? And I think all of these things, I mean, God, we talk about budget reconciliation and all of that. Guess what? You know, it's gonna take a good amount of money to do all of these things to actually get us on the right course. Let's do it through the budget reconciliation. We've got 51 votes. Just do it. Let's just do it right now. You know, let's not even haggle over it. Who cares about bipartisanship, right? And that's where we have to sort of, it has to dawn on us. The other thing I'm just gonna say, two more points and I'll shut up. But one is, it is too late for sure. And we have to actually protect ourselves and all communities from the impacts of climate change, right? That is coming. We are seeing the effects of the industrial age now, right? So if we're seeing what happened in like the 30s happening, hitting us 100 years later, imagine what is to come. Oh my God. So no matter what it takes, we need to prepare against the effects that are going to come, because it is in large part, in some parts, too late. The second thing is, we cannot be cynical, because if you pay attention, the right wing is super cynical about this. They love talking about climate change in this like, well, we'll all be dead. Well, I'll have my money. I have a bunker. F everybody else. I can build the walls around my own, you know, palace, McCloskey style. Straight up. This is how they feel. They want us to be cynical. And if you realize that and you recognize that and you recognize the most radical thing we can do right now is to have hope and to work and organize, then we got this. We can do this.
I think that's a good point to end on. We will check in for tomorrow's show and see to what extent people are taking this seriously, to what extent the right wing is trying to gaslight around this. But for now, that's what we've got. We are gonna take a short break. We come back, we've got a lot more news, but we're gonna take a short one. So we'll see you after this. Okay, everybody, welcome back. It is Fantastic Mondays with myself and Francesca Fiorentini, the host of the Bituation Room, which is still gonna be uploaded, right?
What do you mean?
An issue. Wasn't there an issue?
How dare you stop it? I'm working on it. It's on Spotify and on Stitcher right now. You can also watch it back on my YouTube channel, Franny Fio. Thanks for everyone who's subscribed. Having a little trouble with the Apple Podcasts at the moment, but will be out very shortly. It was a great episode.
Just joshing you. Sometimes we have problems with the podcast too. Shut up. Where a past episode will be uploaded as like for today, which is obviously incredibly frustrating, I'm sure. And so people will send me messages, and I try to tell them like I have a feeling you have more control over that than I do. Like, I don't know how to fix that problem, but sorry, it sucks.
No, yeah, anyway, my response is like, I'm trying, like face full of tears.
Cut to Francesca just covered in cords. I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, we have exciting news for you, and that is that I think for the first time, Indisputable, which is still coming up after the damage report today, has a guest host. I don't know that that's happened before, but it's coming. Brett Ehrlich will be taking the reins of Indisputable, making it marginally more disputable, but we'll see. We'll give him a chance. That will be Brett Ehrlich. He will be hosting. Indianapolis is having. That's for Indisputable. No. So the Atlanta area is having some power problems, probably caused by climate change. Let's keep it real. Sure. But anyway, that is coming up. So definitely stay tuned and show your support to Brett Ehrlich as he takes over for Rashad Ritchie. That said, Francesca, you ready to do some more news?
Si, senor.
Okay, let's jump into a few interviews as I try to get comfortable. Everybody get comfortable as we get into this. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was asked on the Dana Bash show whether she was still considering a primary challenge to New York Senator Chuck Schumer. And here is what she had to say.
To challenge Senator Schumer in a primary race.
You know, here's the thing is that, and I know it drives everybody nuts, but the way that I really feel about this and the way that I really approach my politics and my political career is that I do not look at things and I do not set my course positionally. And I know there's a lot of people who do not believe that, but I can't operate the way that I operate and do the things that I do in politics while trying to be aspiring to other things or calculating to other things. And so all of that is to say is that I make decisions based on what I think our people need and my community needs. And so I'm not commenting on that.
Okay, so she's not commenting on that. Of course, I mean, she did. Like, that is a comment on that, Francesca. So, you know, there was a lot about her governing philosophy in there. But in terms of whether a challenge is likely to happen, or even if it's not, why she's not ruling it out, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I will be the AOC whisperer and interpreter. And what that really meant is if he F's up, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will see. I have my eyes on him. We will see if he disappoints me. And then I will decide. Like, that's, I mean, she is so gracious and so honest. And there's like a, like, just that AOC genuineness, that like not political. Look, if she is a conniving politician, which maybe she is secretly, she masks it with a whole lot of like honesty and personability. So, I definitely am inclined to believe her, but I do feel like there is a little bit of a, like, you know, I think at this point I have him running scared enough for him to do what I want. But I think it would be hard. Look, if she challenged him in 2022, that actually, and I'm being totally real with you, that'd be a hard fight. That would be a hard campaign. That'd be a very different. Schumer is blessed on high by the five centrists that are left, you know. AOC's got the grassroots support. She's arguably the most popular politician in the country, if not the most popular politician. That doesn't always translate to turnout and voting.
Yeah, and so like I've previously talked about wanting her to primary him. But I do think, like, if I had a button that I could press that's like, AOC announces a challenge, would I press it? I don't know. If I did, it would be after staring at it, sweating for a very long time, because like, I think she should be a runaway victor, and maybe she would. Like, people in our positions who talk into cameras on YouTube often like to imply that they know all. I can read the code of the Matrix, but I can't. I can read the novelization of the Matrix, but that's really where it ends. He would have $300 million that would be given to him by Nancy Pelosi's brother and by Obama. And like, think about it, like, they would fire every cannon they have. Now, she would bring to the table all that she brings, but it's definitely not a slam dunk. And were she to lose and thus probably not still be in Congress, that would be a major loss. is that actually preferable to her waiting and potentially running, you know, for president in 3 years? I don't know, but it's certainly not a slam dunk. And anyway, like to your point about sort of waiting and watching and seeing, sure, that might be what she's doing. But even the implication that she might be doing that perhaps accomplishes a lot. Chuck Schumer has never been better than in the last year or so.
Yeah.
Not great or whatever, but he's better than he would be if she weren't in Congress. And she gets that whether she's even interested in running or not, which she might not be.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that like winning your district is one thing and winning the state is different, you know, and she could beat, you know, hit the pavement and, you know, she could hit the pavement and she could win her district, and she did. And she proved that grassroots organizing truly does work. And we've talked about, you know, the 4,000 votes that Nina Turner lost by, like, it upsets me, but it does not shake me to the core. But I think going after Schumer, and this is the thing, you know, a lot of people have tried to challenge even Pelosi, right? And Pelosi, you know, and again, it's again a district, it's in the House, it's not the same, but you come for the king, you can't miss, right? She can't miss on this. It'll be, you want her to have every ounce of ammunition. And I think she has more to prove in her time in Congress. She has more to prove. She has more to get done. And sadly, it might mean working with centrists to move the needle a little bit more to prove that she is a firebrand, but she is also smart and she's willing to work. She's willing to not just take all the glory for herself. She is a team player. And I don't mean that in a she's gonna accept corporate money team player. She's gonna, go easy on ExxonMobil. No. I don't mean any of that stuff. I mean on tangible, practical things that help Americans' lives. So I don't want it, you know, there is a line there. And I think she has more to prove on that.
Sure. You're totally right about like not being able to miss against Schumer. Now, on the other hand, she could miss without it being a huge deal in a presidential run. The expectations would be less. You're not going up against one person. You're not necessarily going the whole way. You could use it to elevate your agenda. Like those arguments don't really apply in a presidential primary in the same exact way.
Yes, and they elevate your status. You're there to basically, you're there to just like get your talking point out in a good way, move the dial, move the discussion, push the discussion in progressive direction. You're not wrong about that.
Yeah, and by the way, I say all this and we have this discussion knowing that AOC would probably prefer that we not focus on conversations like this, but you know, we're not best ever. I can say whatever I want. I wish we were. I really wish we were. But anyway, okay, that
this
said,
let's move on. This always ends in you like low-key gaslighting AOC into being your best friend. I mean, if we were best friends and you came over to my house and like we played tabletop games, then maybe I would you know, go easy on you, but you're not my best friend yet. This is like your version.
Do you think she wouldn't enjoy some board games? She likes board games.
I just love how this is your version of debate me. You listen, it's like
play me in King of Tokyo. Come on, let's play. Anyway, no, let's not do that. Just run for president in a few years and I'll be happy. Anyway, okay, let's move on to the next topic. Okay. AOC was also asked about some of the way that Fox News has covered her and her agenda and some of the implications of that. Here's what she had to say.
Do you ever watch Fox News? Do you watch what they say about you?
Not a ton. Every once in a while I do. And I think that it's really fascinating. I actually find it to be really, really fascinating because it reveals a lot about the subconscious of folks that are crafting these narratives. And they very often are speaking to these very subconscious narratives about women or about people of color or about Latinos or Latinas or about working class people. You know, these caricatures that are developed are not really personal. They are societal.
So you can watch that and take yourself, you, the human being, out of it?
Yeah.
And look at it almost from an academic point of view?
Yeah. Actually, the right wing critique.
That seems like it would be pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
Because you are a human being.
It is. The harder one is the critiques from within the party.
Yeah, so Francesca, I'm taking her word that she's able to do that. I'm surprised, like, because it's nonstop and vicious and not fact-based and all of that. I wonder, like, are there people that you think get more sustained, unfair, insane, xenophobic, misogynistic criticism than her? Like, maybe Ilhan Omar?
Ilhan Omar probably.
Maybe, I'm not even sure. That seems like it would be hard to deal with.
No, but AOC said this in many interviews before, that, you know, the harder thing to take is turning around and seeing her own party either not defending her or doubling down and saying the same thing. And I think we saw that actually after Nina Turner lost and Hakeem Jeffries was interviewed by the New York Times and was like, basically using that loss to say progressives are not serious about taking down fascism. The progressives aren't serious and all this stuff. And it's like, what? What are you talking about? Like, honestly, you mean so providing healthcare to people, stopping climate change, giving, you know, home care workers a raise and providing a universal daycare, like all the things. Raising the minimum wage, that is not serious about like stopping the destitution that then can be so easily manipulated into a fascist takeover. Like all, like what do you, so anyway, and yep. I think, and I think we also feel that very much so. And it's why we often, you know, do target more centrist Democrats because the right is so predictable, but progressives and not progressives, but Democrats, you're always like, which way are they gonna go on this? And so, but yeah, it is. I mean, I'm the person on Twitter who's like, "Oh, you said a meanie thing." Like, so I don't know how she takes
well,
it.
Well, I'm sure you get your fair share. That's definitely true. Yeah, I think she's right. Like the stuff, like the agenda that she's advocating for, her effectiveness in communicating it. Like these are all things that were, if the Democratic Party were constituted in a way that it actually shared those goals, could ride her style and the style of other members of the squad to a massive governing majority that would be incredibly durable. But they're not doing that. Instead, they backstab her. And it's something like I often talk about, you know, like at TYT, we get attacked by basically everyone. Like we're used to the right attacking us and opposing us because they oppose our goals. But, you know, we get attacked by the centrists and the establishment too, obviously. And I get that too. We want to primary and replace most of them. But then when you even get attacked by like, you know, so-called leftists or whatever, it's like seriously, is there any direction that daggers aren't coming from?
No, yeah.
And obviously, because she's a singularly high profile politician, she gets it far, far, far worse.
Yeah.
But I get that last point that she made there. It's like, one would hope that you could at least let down the guard slightly for a second in one direction, but unfortunately you can't. Okay, let's move to one last little bit. We're gonna go to one of the darkest bits in Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's recent interview on CNN with Dana Bash, where they return to the topic of what the representative was thinking on January 6th. Now, she had notably already said that she was worried about potentially being killed by this mob of people, these Trump supporters. It seems like a reasonable fear, but it actually goes farther than that, as she will describe.
I think one of the reasons why that impact was so doubled that day is because of the misogyny and the racism that is so deeply rooted and animated that attack on the Capitol. You know, white supremacy and patriarchy are very linked in a lot of ways. There's a lot of sexualizing of that violence. And I didn't think that I was just going to be killed. I thought other things were going to happen to me as well.
So what sounds like what you're telling me right now is that you didn't only think that you were going to die, you thought you were going to be raped.
Yeah. I thought I was.
And Francesca, obviously that's devastating. And there's so much in news that like if you pay attention to a lot of news, it sort of hits you in two ways. It's like absorbing her very real fears, very understandable fears. And then also like knowing, oh God, what are the worst people in the country going to do with that quote that we just saw? Like, we remember how she, when she said that she was worried about being killed, how the people who literally all they are is a skin, a little bit of blood and misogyny. They took that and said, oh, look at her pretending to be scared, making it about her. She has talked about being a survivor of sexual violence. She was obviously terrified there. Thinking about what is going to happen later today when the right starts to respond to that is just so vile.
When the right and even the left is gonna respond to that, or the so-called left, right? And people who just like, you know, they're, you know, half of their cliques are just, you know, making fun of AOC as if that is a progressive or even productive thing to do. And once again, Representative Ocasio-Cortez does not have to say any of that. She does not have to be that honest, because she could be frightened by the people who have mocked her for her fear and said, you know what, I'm just gonna do a stiff upper lip and I'm not gonna say I was scared, we're gonna move past this. But instead, she gives us once again an incredibly honest, raw and real version of herself. And I think in that first Instagram live that she did, where she talks about her fear and talks about being a survivor, she makes it more broadly about also other people who might be watching who are survivors, who understand what that feels like and understands that fear and sort of the trauma brain that kicks in, and this the reminder of being unsafe. And she has the audacity to not actually have a stiff upper lip. She has the audacity to be so raw. And like, who among us could say that we have that kind of bravery to be open about the kinds of real fears that we have? The times when we were scared, the times when, you know, we cowered, you know, the times when that reminded us of other times we were victimized.
Yeah,
that is huge of her. And so, yes, it's devastating to think about what the right is. They're gonna have a whole field day. But let's be real about this. They pick on AOC also because she's an attractive woman. They do that. She's working class, she's Latina, and she's attractive.
Educated
and attractive, and they hate that. They love, you know, she's deserving. Man, there's all kinds of disgusting things out there that are being said about her, right? There's, you know, we know that. And it's ridiculous. There's no reason to it, but yet, you know, it's not lost. It shouldn't be lost on us that yes, there is some part of it that's like their sick fascination with her because they should think she's pretty.
Yeah. I hope we're wrong. I hope that this, as the sixth should have, will be an opportunity for people like Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro and others to finally come to grips with how they've weaponized race and gender to animate these people who are fueled purely by anger, rage, lust, all of that. This is an opportunity. Kind of feel like it won't be used for that, but we'll watch, we'll see. If it happens, we'll be fair. Sort of doubt it though. Okay, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, AOC wasn't the only notable politician interviewed. We have another, but he's mostly just saying absolute nonsense. So stay tuned for that after this. Reminder everyone that after this program, in about 39 minutes, Indisputable will be coming, but it will be led by Brett Ehrlich today. So a slightly different show, should be a lot of fun. Be sure to go show him some support. Let him know that the Dragon Squad sent you. That'll be coming up in just a little bit. That said, let's jump back into our stories. We don't have much time. Okay. Donald Trump was interviewed by Dan Bongino, and a number of different topics came up. One was the state of the pandemic under President Biden, and Trump had an interesting way of thinking about that.
Well, first of all, could you imagine if I were president right now and we had this massive attack from the coronavirus? You know, now they like to call it they have new names and they'll have other new names, but it's exactly what we had. We had the Same thing. If that were me, they'd be saying, what a horrible thing, what a horrible job. I don't ever hear that, you know, and these are numbers in some cases that are equivalent to what it was. But we don't hear that. I think this.
Okay, so first of all, Francesca, he brings up a good point. Can you imagine if under his presidency, we had been hit by a coronavirus? I think it's a coronavirus. I think he said it was a coronavirus. Imagine if one of those hit during his presidency.
Wow, that'd be crazy.
Can you imagine that?
What? You're so dumb. I just want to squeeze his little brain. You're so dumb. What is inside of this? This is a nothing. It's just a ball of lint. Oh, it disintegrated in my ear. So stupid.
I don't know what. And look, him saying that deranged, lint-brained thing that he said is bad enough. But Dan Bongino, he powered through. He's not going to ask some sort of follow-up. He's not. I don't even know if he noticed. I'm like, should I give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he thought, what the hell are you talking about? Maybe he didn't. Maybe it just went right by his dome. I don't know. But that seems
very,
like the
sort
of thing.
That's very difficult for anything to get by Dan Bongino's dome.
It takes space.
Let's be real.
If you have been saying, you know what the problem with Biden is? Cognitive decline. If you've been saying that, okay. Be a guy that's worried about the mental state of politicians. There's material out there. You can do that if you want. But then you can't have an interview with Lint Brain and not bring up when he pretends that the coronavirus didn't exist. Now, there are a couple of other issues. One, they're not talking about the numbers. What are you talking about? Like, I can only speak for the damage report, but we talk about it constantly. I know it probably bothers a lot of our audience. Nobody watches those videos, but we do talk about it. The thing is, though, when talking about the numbers, you do get to talk a little bit about what are we trying to do? What is the person in charge trying to do? 100,000 cases under one president who doesn't even admit that it exists and says it's gonna magically disappear or whatever is slightly different than 100,000 cases under another president who is trying to get literally everyone vaccinated and is being stymied at every turn by the very governors of the states that are leading the rise in those numbers. That's what I just exercised is barely critical thinking, but they don't even do that. Anyway, now.
What's his follow up? What's his follow up? Let's
there wasn't
it.
One.
Oh,
no,
okay.
Follow up.
Right.
There was consequences though. So that's not the most important part of that. We're gonna have to gloss over this, but he also talked, the president did, with Dan Bongino about election fraud. And he talked about how the election had been stolen. But if you were watching in the replay, you might not have seen that. As Liz Harrington noted, she said, wow. So I went to post a clip from President Trump's great interview from Fox News last night. And lo and behold, Fox News edited and changed what President Trump said, censoring out 45 accurately describing the fake election. First of all, they didn't change what he said. They just edited it out. They didn't put in fake words. But they did cut out the section where he talked about election fraud. Now that led to, on Parler and a bunch of other right wing things, Dan Bongino being slammed as part of the mainstream media. He's censoring the president. He's pretending the election was fair, which he is not going to let stand. So he posted, I was not made aware of any edits made to my interview with President Trump on the Fox News YouTube account. I'm looking into this right now and I will provide a full account of what happened. Well, what happened was that they edited it. We don't need a Capitol Commission. They were worried that he was going to get them in legal liability, so they edited it out. That's what happened. So anyway, he doesn't want you to think he's part of the mainstream media, but the issue with that, Francesca, is he does work for Fox and these people now hate Fox. So how do you, that's a weird position to be in.
I will have a strong words for my employer. Boop-a-doop, masks are bad. What? Was I supposed to follow? I'm mad, I'm still mad. Anyway. I'm gonna just collect my check here. Bongino, man, this guy, he got a break. He got a break to get on Fox News, took him off of Facebook. You know, I miss the old Dan. You know, Dan was just a real, he shot from the hip when he was on Facebook. Also just shot, I'm sure, generally into the air and around.
He did. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, everybody. We do have more coming up after this short break. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.